Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Well, last night, Game 1 of the World Series on ESPN Radio, Dodgers and Rays. And early on, Clayton Kershaw, starting for L.A., did not look good the first inning. Just one swing and miss among 20 pitches. He's kind of all over the place. But wow, he gathered momentum. Here's Kershaw on the top of the fourth.
The 0-2 pitch on the way. Swing and a miss. Great down and in slider there from Kershaw. And he has it rolling right now.
Dan Shulman, who was doing the game last night with Chris Singleton, Jessica Mendoza, and myself chiming in from time to time. Cody Bellinger gave the Dodgers the lead in the bottom of the fourth.
Look back by Glass now. And a first pitch swing and a high fly ball. Right center field. It is well hit. Kiermaier back. It's gone. He hit it into the Dodger bullpen. And Cody Bellinger has given the Dodgers a 2-0 lead.
This is someone who, when he gets hot, can carry a team. He had a home run in Game 7 of the NLCS, and he hit that home run last night. Kiermaier struck back in the top of the fifth.
The 1-0 now to Kiermaier. A fly ball. Hit well. Right field. It's gone. Kevin Kiermaier takes Clayton Kershaw deep, and the Rays are on the board, trailing 2-1.
And in the top of the fifth, Kershaw continued to roll.
2-2, swing and a miss, and Zunino down on strikes. The side is retired. That's 8 now for Kershaw.
In the bottom of the fifth inning, the Dodgers blew the game open with help from Mookie Betts, who stole second, got to third, and then made a great decision on the bases.
Here's the 2-0 and a swing and a bouncer to first. Diaz throws to the plate, but it's up the third baseline a bit, and Betts will slide in safely. Seager to third, Muncy safe at first, and it's 3-1 Dodgers.
And the rally continued.
A full count. Glasnow now with a career-high 111 pitches. 3-2 and a fastball, a little jam shot to center, and it's down for a base hit. End to score is Seager. Coming around to third is Muncy. Smith with an RBI single to make it 4-1 Dodgers.
In the National League Championship Series in Game 6 and 7, Mookie showed off his defense. In this game, he showed off his base running and his power.
Mookie Betts, the first batter that Fleming faces, and Betts sends a fly ball to right field. It's pretty well hit. It's carrying. It's gone. Opposite field home run, Mookie Betts. And it is 7-1.
That's a cruel greeting into the ballgame for Josh Fleming for Mookie Betts.
With the Dodgers holding a big lead, Dave Roberts decided to take Clayton Kershaw out of the game after 6 innings and 78 pitches, perhaps saving him ammunition for later in the series. The Rays began to rally in the top of the 7th inning. Victor Gonzalez was on the mound for L.A.
3-2, first and second, one out. And the pitch. And a fastball line back to the mound. Caught by Gonzalez. Throw to second. And they double off Brasso. An absolute rocket back to the mound. Gonzalez makes the catch and turns what would have been a base hit, should have been a base hit, into a line drive, inning-ending double play.
And here was Dan Shulman calling in the top of the ninth.
Wendell bats in a pretty significant crouch from the left side. He swings and bounces it back the mound off the bare hand of Kelly, and it'll be Seager getting it and firing it on to first. Kelly looks like he's all right. Got a big smile on his face. 1-6-3 on the game-ending putout, and the Dodgers behind a great performance from Clayton Kershaw, another home run from Cody Bellinger, and then they pour it on in the middle innings, and they win game one 8-3.
Rays manager Kevin Cash talked about game one.
Not discouraging, disappointing, yeah. You know, we bounce right back like we've done multiple times this year and look to find a way to win a game tomorrow. We got Blake on the mound, which is very, very encouraging. So, no, we'll be good.
Cash talked about Clayton Kershaw and the difficulty of facing him.
Kershaw was on, had a pretty good breaking ball going, you know, really short, and I think there's some deception involved. I mean, you can appreciate and totally see why he's heading to the Hall of Fame one day whenever he's done, but I mean, he had good stuff. Velo seemed like it was popping out of his hand pretty good. Really did a nice job against us.
And he talked about his starting pitcher, Tyler Glasnow.
Well, just, you know, I think it was ultimately a kind of a lack of strike throwing right there. I looked up at one point, and I think he was, you know, 37 strikes, 37 balls. That's not ideal, especially against an offense like this that can really capitalize on the free passes.
Dave Roberts talked about Mookie Betts.
It's great, and that's just another element that Mookie brings. You know, he does a lot of studying, and to be able to create stress, and whether it's stealing a base or just being on base to make the pitcher speed up or not execute a pitch, he creates tension, and he's just a heck of a ball player.
Dave Roberts talked about Cody Bellinger, of course, is now playing alongside Mookie Betts.
You look at just sheer talent, they're a couple of the best players in all of baseball. And now you take Mookie, who's really impacted us, obviously, as we talk so much about, in so many ways on both sides of the baseball as well as on the bases. And Cody just made another great play tonight defensively, the homer a couple nights ago, and just taking really good at bat. So, yeah, Mookie's going to get the best of everybody. But now, you know, you layer in Cody and you know, the experience that he's had in the postseason and learning from that. And I think you can bucket Corey in that same conversation.
Cody Bellinger talked about game one.
Yeah, that's always important in any series, especially the World Series. We did a great job of sticking to our plan. It was a great game overall, and you know, we got to come in tomorrow and do the same thing over again and continue to have fun and grind ABs and play as a team.
Clayton Kershaw talked about his performance in Game 1 on SportsCenter.
Yeah, it was a great game tonight all the way around for us. You know, it didn't feel too different other than being not in our home ballpark or being on the road or anything like that. But, you know, like you said, I've gotten to do this before. And, you know, the last couple haven't gone so well for me. So I'm fortunate to get out there in game one and get another chance at it. And, you know, we pulled out a win tonight and our guys played awesome. And we're excited to come back tomorrow and try to do it again.
Kershaw talked about the Dodgers.
Belly, obviously, Will with big hits, JT, obviously, does what he does, Muntz, Jock, yeah, all the way down. It's just, I didn't even say Seager, you know, so it's just like, it's just a special team.
We'll be hearing a full SportsCenter interview with the great Mookie Betts later in the podcast. A couple of other notes, Major League Baseball ownership committee approved the New York Mets sale to Steve Cohen. We're waiting word from the owners to take a formal vote to push that ahead, but Steve Cohen now fully in position to take over the Mets. And a sad note, former Major League Baseball umpire Darryl Cousins has passed away at age 74, his brother said, after a bout with cancer. Now, before we get to Carl Ravitch and to Sarah Langs, I want to tell you about season 2 of the ESPN Investigates podcast that's now available. The Running Man tells the story of an obscure former Olympian and alleged serial sexual predator and how a 14-month ESPN investigation brought him out of the shadows. More than 50 men were physically abused and mentally manipulated by their coach over 40 years until they banded together decades later to find justice. Subscribe and listen now to ESPN Investigates wherever you get your podcasts.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Carl Ravitch goes to baseball tonight, which is playing during the course of the World Series. Ravi, tell me what you did last night.
Well, we had a good night. Ravitch, Kirkson, Teixeira, producer Greg Cauley, and several members of the Baseball Tonight staff enjoyed a little meal after our pregame show, which runs from 7 to 8. We watched the game together and did SportsCenter postgame. And we all sort of came to the realization, as excited as we were, and I think there was legitimate excitement given the three starters that the Rays had lined up. We were all excited. Like, okay, we've got pitching beats, you know, good pitching beats offense any day. And the Dodgers just, you know, they kind of went into their workshop and whittled away at Tyler Glasnow, and Kevin Cash seemed reluctant to take him out. And in the end, it felt like, you know, you had a $200 million payroll difference, and the Dodgers were just better. And that may be a knee-jerk reaction to one game. We're all probably guilty of it, but boy, that was some cold water in the face of the expectation, this is going to be great.
I completely agree with you. You know, the phrase that kept on popping in my head last night was the Rays brought a knife to a gunfight.
Yes.
Like, it just felt like that the two sides are just on different planes. And especially, and I, you know, I talked about this on the podcast yesterday, and I asked Dave Roberts about it. You know, he, of course, was part of that 2004 Red Sox team that dug itself out from an 0-3 hole against the Yankees. And by the time, you remember this, Carl, by the time they got to Game 7, they were rolling. They were like the Rabbit train. Like, they were just going along, and they steamrolled the Cardinals in the World Series. And I asked Dave Roberts that in our Zoom call before last night's game, as we're getting ready to do the game on ESPN Radio. He started nodding halfway through my question. Like, he absolutely sees the comparison. This Dodger team, like that Red Sox team, stared at the abyss of a 3-1 deficit against the Braves. They dug themselves out. They had a great Game 7. You know, Cody Bellinger getting a big hit. And last night, they just rolled into that game.
And similar talent. I mean, superstar talent, on the 0-4 Red Sox and certainly on this team. You know, and I think, there was a revelation during this 60-game season and then certainly early round playoff when the Dodgers lineup turns over. And the guy standing in the on-deck circle is Mookie Betts. You just realize that, in a sense, the circle that the Dodgers had hoped was completed had never really been completed until they brought in the last piece of that puzzle, and it's Mookie Betts. And on a team that has literal superstars, Corey Seager is a superstar. Justin Turner is a superstar, or certainly has been. Cody Bellinger is a superstar. Kershaw is a superstar. Bueller is a superstar. And then you have a bunch of guys who are stars in the making. You know, Mookie Betts is the one that shines brighter than all of them. And they added him, and this is year one. And the difference that he's had on that team is massively significant. And it's easy to say that, and people would be like, duh, obviously. They added one of the best players in the game. If they added Mike Trout, they'd be that good too. Well, you could make the case, and I did last night on Twitter. You just asked, who impacts the game of baseball that they are playing more than Mookie Betts? And that's exclusive of, you know, somebody going out there and throwing a no-hitter. I understand a pitcher is ultimately the guy. If he's on, that's going to determine that. But you take a position player, and you tell me who, based on their defensive abilities, based on the arm that he has, based on his speed, based on his IQ, based on his ability to foul pitches off, based on his ability to get in a pitcher's head, based on his power, impacts the game more than Mookie Betts. He finishes the circle.
He really does. And he's also in a special class, Carl. I was thinking about this morning, of you know, superstar players who are so well-rounded and such phenomenal athletes, you know, at that level. The first name that always comes to mind for me is the guy I think is the greatest player of all time, and that's Willie Mays. Roberto Clemente was certainly in that class. Mickey Mantle, who is mostly remembered, as you know, for all the home runs he hit, but when he started and before he blew out his knee in the World Series, unbelievably fast as a switch hitter. He was that type of guy, and obviously Trout is that type of guy, although, you know, the one difference between him and Mookie is that, you know, Trout just doesn't throw nearly as well. But it's a very... Right. Small group of players, you know, who are at that level to impact games in that way.
I would agree. And I think I would put Barry Bonds in
well,
that group.
Except Bonds
as well,
was a little bit like Trout. Sorry to interrupt, Carl. Bonds was a little bit like Trout, that the one thing he didn't really do that well was throw.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking early in his career when he was running, when he was playing outfield, when he was a guy that you know, the arm may not have been a 10, it may have been an 8, 7, but his IQ, the intangibles that go along with the physical, to me anyway, my observation was I would probably put him in that category. But, you know, and look, when Mookie Betts was dancing off second base, personally, I said to Tex and Tim, he's going to steal third. As soon as they threw to second base, I thought the next pitch he was going to go. It was a couple of pitches later that he ended up stealing. But look, you're right. I know somebody had described the impact that a great point guard can have on a basketball team. It's really hard to do that on a baseball field, given the few times you come to the plate. But the game is going to be impacted in one way or another by Mookie Betts, whether it's a great catch, a home run robbing catch, a shoestring catch, a throw, just literally taking in that first at bat, you go 3-2 on glass now. You're like, okay, well, again, check. He did his job. You got pitches exposed. It's not going to be an easy night for Tiger Glasnow. Anytime Mookie Betts comes up, there's going to be foul balls. And he is the straw that stirs it. And he's an agitator. And he's also likable. Like there's a wonderfully irritating aspect to Mookie Betts from an opponent's perspective, where it's not like the Dennis Rodman who you wanted on your team, but you just didn't really like. Like Mookie Betts is a likable guy. I think he could even hurt his mic last night when he was chatting with Willy Adames while standing on second base. Like he's affable, you know, and he's an affable assassin because he's going to kill you. And he killed the Rays last night.
Boy, was that such a 2020 moment. Now, I didn't hear the mic because I was doing game on radio, but I assume from the body language that what happened was, is that Mookie Betts, who of course played in the American League East against Willy Adames, got to second base after stealing the base and sees Willie standing there. Willie's a super nice guy too. And they're like, hey, Mookie, good to see you. Hey, Willie, good to see you. And they share hugs because, of course, it's 2020 and everyone's been locked into their own divisions. They've been locked in bubbles. I'm assuming that's kind of what it was about.
It seemed to be. And then there seemed to be some cat and mouse going on, you know, with Glasnow looking back and Adames pounding his glove and Mookie kind of smirking like you're not going to get me. You play your game, whatever you're going to do, you know, probably thought bubble. Look, I'm going to steal third. I'm not going to tell you that, but that's what's going to happen here. And eventually he got the throw over to second base. He dove back safely. And yep, here now I'm definitely going to steal. And the thought bubble turned into reality and they double stole. And I know, you know, people have certainly retweeted it, but you know, Mookie Betts and one other guy are the only two people in the history of baseball to walk and steal two bases in the same inning of a World Series game. It's Mookie Betts and Babe Ruth. Now, I don't know that Babe Ruth was the all-around athlete that Mookie Betts was, but anytime you and Babe Ruth are on a list together and that's it, well, you're in some pretty elite company.
Yeah, his last three games that he's played in his postseason reminds me a lot of Roberto Clemente from the 71 World Series, where it was like that became Clemente's stage. You know, he's throwing the ball all over the place. He's making plays, running the line. He's scaring base runners. Oh, and he hit the home run that gave the Pirates a 1-0 lead in Game 7 of the World Series, a game they won 2-1. The other thing, too, that's funny about Mookie is that he's not swinging the ball that bat that well right now, Carl. When he's going great, he's pulling the ball. We really haven't seen that part of his game, and yet he is dominating in recent days, which is why this was so much fun. How about Clayton Kershaw last night? I actually thought first inning, like, oh no, he's in trouble. First 20 pitches, he got one swing and miss. As he acknowledged after the game, he's bouncing sliders in the dirt. He's not really close. And then he comes out after that and makes an adjustment and winds up with a 50% swing and miss rate. The Rays swung 38 times against him in his 78 pitches, and they swung and missed 19 times, a 50% swing and miss rate. Not only is it the highest rate of any start in his career, postseason or regular season, Paul Ambichetti sent this along this morning. It was the highest rate in a World Series start by any pitcher since they started tracking that statistic in 1988. Oh, by the way, that's the last year the Dodgers won the World Series.
You know, for Clayton Kershaw, it was the perfect storm in the sense of the team that he's facing. And I mean, I'm guessing you, like everyone else, by about the fourth inning, you recognize, well, we're watching baseball in 2020. We're seeing a whole bunch of strikeouts. We're seeing very few players get on base. And we assume this game's going to end when somebody hits a two-run home run. That's how this is going to play out. The fifth inning changed because there were some walks, and obviously we saw some stolen bases, which was wonderful because we don't usually see that. But there was a point in that game you're like, yep, seen this movie before. Who's going to hit the home run? And Kershaw's ability to work around the Rays' bats, I think, highlights, again, the significant difference between the two teams. For as similar as they may be in some ways, there does appear to be a difference between the way that the Dodgers approach at-bats, similar to the way that the Astros had recently approached at-bats, the Red Sox, the Yankees. There is, and Mookie made it quite clear after the LCS, we just grind at-bats. And you know, it sounds cliche, and it's probably boring, and no one really wants to hear about grinding at-bats because that means foul balls and long at-bats. But that they do wear you down, and the Rays don't. You know, the Rays didn't wear Clayton Kershaw down at all. And he eventually stopped bouncing balls. Tyler Glasnow never stopped bouncing balls. In fact, at one point, I think we asked, has he thrown more balls that have hit the dirt or the glove? Because every inning, it felt like Tyler Glasnow was bouncing ball after ball after ball. And Kershaw, as you said in the first inning, was, and then he wasn't. And then he ended up with a 50% swing and miss rate. But the ideal team, and this is why you worry about the series when you know Walker Buehler's about to show up, and whether it's Urias or May, like they have swing and miss stuff, and you're bringing it to a team that swings and misses. That to me exposed, again, another significant difference between these two teams. And in the end, currently, after one game, you're certainly left to feel like, holy smokes, the Dodgers are so much better than the Rays.
Yeah, and I was talking with a really smart person yesterday, someone you know well, and I can't use his name, but he basically said, you know, game two, with the way the Dodgers are right now, Blake Snell is a terrible matchup for the Rays. Because he talked about how this is someone, and look, Blake Snell won a Cy Young Award when he's at his best. He's got great stuff, and he dominates hitters. He doesn't have great command right now. He runs really deep counts, which could potentially play in the hand of the Dodgers as locked in as they are.
Yeah, and look, I understand. Look, it lined up beautifully because Glasnow does have swing and miss stuff when he's right. He wasn't right. So they had a big chance last night. And Tex said during our pregame show, he thought that was a must-win game for the Rays. Like, you need to win game one. You need to beat Kershaw, which would, you know, set them off for the next Kershaw start. That didn't happen. You need to get length out of Glasnow. They tried. That didn't really work. You need to set the stage to show that what you guys have done through the regular season and these playoffs is real. Randy Arozarena last night, you know, he got Kershawed. He looked very, I don't want to use the word amateurish, but look, you could pitch to him. Up until the World Series, you couldn't get Randy Arozarena out, and he was hitting home runs at a rate that was Barry Bonds-ish. Last night, he looked very regular, and Kershaw did that to him. Buehler will likely do that to the rest of the Rays. And whoever they start, Gonsolin's going to start tonight, and whoever they go to, again, you just wonder, is this a knee-jerk reaction to a dominant Game 1 performance? Or are we able to, you know, sort of see the forest through the trees? This matchup doesn't work for the Rays?
No, the only young player who I've seen who basically adjustments never mattered was Juan Soto. Like, Juan Soto's in a class by himself. Right. Randy Arozarena last night, Hembo sent along these notes, saw 15 pitches, 3 fastballs, 3 changeups, 2 curveballs, 7 sliders. They're working down and in the area that we talked about on the podcast yesterday as being a potential weakness for him. I don't mean to overstate this because, you know, if the Rays fall behind or it's a one-sided game, then the Dodgers might pitch him differently. I kind of think he's going to be a non-factor, Carl, in this series because the Dodgers have decided he's going to be, which is why Brandon Lau's struggles are so big.
Oh, you're right.
And just watching his body language last night, it actually reminded me of Cody Bellinger from a couple years ago when they were throwing those sliders down and in, down and in, down and in, and he could not conquer that. He could not get over that. Brandon Lau looks like he's so deeply in his own head.
sadly, Buster, you're right. And, you know, the insistence on the way we do things with the Rays is to leave him near the top of the order. It seems clear, and again, what seems clear to most doesn't necessarily fit the "it seems clear to us" with the Rays. They obviously do things differently. I know I was not in the minority when Cash took Morton out the other day of like, wow, really? We're doing that now? And it worked. One point about it worked necessarily doesn't mean that it wouldn't have worked if you left him in, but it worked to take him out. So we all assume that it was the right decision. If you left Morton in, might have worked. We don't know. In the case of leaving Brandon Lowe at the top, again, it doesn't feel like that's the play. Kevin Kiermaier is back. He hit a home run. Maybe we move Kevin Kiermaier up and Brandon Lowe down. Maybe we move him down. But he does. He looks defeated. The home run he hit in the LCS, sometimes like Gonzalez with a catch last night, the ball finds the glove. It felt like Lau's homer, the bat found the ball as opposed to it actually, you know, sought it out and did what it was supposed to. It was more like that was a Buck Showalterism where contacted damage, you know, that was one of those where you throw the bat at it and, oh my gosh, it hit it and it went out. So it's not the same guy that was so great during the regular season. And back to Arozarena quickly, you know, we were all wondering who else is going to hit. Like Meadows hasn't hit.
No, nope.
Brandon hasn't hit. Yandy Diaz hasn't hit. At some point, you realize there's only one dude hitting here. And if we can quiet him and the other guys don't figure it out, well, how are we going to lose? And that's what it felt like last night. Who else is going to hit here?
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, if the Rays win tonight, we'll probably be boomerang back the other way.
Of course.
That's what's so great about the World Series. All right, I got two more for you before we go that are not related to the World Series. Jeff Luhnow, the longtime general manager of the Astros, who was implicated in the sign-stealing scandal that was ruled upon by Major League Baseball, fired, and he's currently out of baseball serving a suspension, did an interview with KPRC in which he basically said he didn't have knowledge of the cheating scandal. Give a listen.
If I go through all of my behavior, all of my actions, they're consistent with someone that tells the truth, and they're also consistent with someone that didn't know. I did a lot to try and prevent us from doing anything wrong. After the Red Sox and the Yankees were punished in 2017, I had a conversation with our manager, and I asked him if anybody in our dugout was using Fitbits or Apple Watches or anything that would be remotely considered against the rules. He told me that one of our coaches had been using an Apple Watch, but after the incident with the Red Sox, had stopped wearing it because clearly we weren't supposed to be doing that. He did not tell me anything else about trash can banging or any impropriety.
I got to say, Carl, after hearing that, it reminds me of when you hear a college basketball coach, head coach, you know, saying he had no knowledge of a pay-for-play scheme from his ear. Like, you were in position to know. Like, all that trash can banging went on for a long time. There were a lot of people with knowledge of that. And then remember, Carl, in the fall of 2018, the Astros put a team employee in the photo well next to the Cleveland Indians dugout, next to the Boston Red Sox dugout, until Major League Baseball complained. And Jeff Luhnow said, there's nothing to see here. This was preventative. Look, there were a lot of signs and a lot of complaints and a lot of things going on for him to not have any knowledge. And I'm sorry, I'm just not buying it. What about you?
Well, I think the head in the sand thing is a fairly easy one for people to fall back on, especially at the level that he's at, to suggest to anybody that would ask him, don't ask and don't tell.
Right.
I don't want to know. So in a sense, it's sort of like, well, did you lie? Well, I withheld, you know, I didn't lie, but I also withheld information I knew. In this case, it feels similar to that concept of, I'm sure, you know, I got a party with a bunch of high school boys and girls downstairs. Did they kiss? Are they, you know, what are they doing? I don't know. I didn't go down there, but you certainly had some concept of what might be going on, and you knew based on some of the conversations that your son and his friends were having, it's a good chance something like that's going on. In Luhnow's case, and I think Rob Manfred kind of made the point yesterday during his interview tour, regardless of whether Luhnow, you know, knew exact details or not, and we have evidence that, in our opinion, proves he does, but regardless of that part of it,
He's in charge.
Yes.
He needs to know. He was charged with being aware of what's going on. So in both senses, I think he was aware. If you're asking, does he know every single detail? I don't think he'd want to know, because I think that makes him complicit in it. But I think there was an absolute awareness and probably knowledge of it, too. So I'm with you on that.
Well, I mean, and think about what was going on. Hundreds of times that trash can was being banged, right? At some point, somebody might have picked that up. And especially as involved as he was in all elements of his organization, and rightly so. You know, this Astros was very successful. He made a lot of great choices. But to be that involved in so many things and to basically say, I had no awareness, I'm with you. You're in charge. You got to know. And yesterday
Buster,
we got word.
Buster, there's a little responsibility on you. It's not like you didn't read the papers. It's not like you didn't read the internet. It's not like you hadn't heard of some of these things. And then the responsibility is on you to go and find out as opposed to go and hide. Like, I don't want to know. Well, no, that is what you have to go do.
Yes.
You've got to go and dig. You've got to go and ask the hard questions so that you do have the knowledge so you can stop it. And it feels like he's telling everyone, I went the other way. Like, it wasn't my deal.
Yeah, he had the power, just as A.J. Hinch all along had the power to basically go to the players, you know, and he said that he wasn't really that involved. He had the power to go to the coaches, to go to the players, said, knock this off, or I'm going in the interview room across the hall, and I'm going to tell everybody everything. It would have stopped. In the same way, Jeff had the power to go to AJ, look him in the eye, and said, it's anything happening. If anything is happening, you need to end it. And he apparently didn't do that. Real quick, Steve Cohen has been approved by the management committee as the future owner of the New York Mets. This is what we expected. I sense, Carl, a lot of hope. A lot of hope among Mets fans coming up here as he takes over as owner.
Of course. I mean, well, why wouldn't there be? You know, you got a guy who's a lifelong Met fan who has suffered along with other Met fans, who looks at this organization now as more than just somebody who goes and pays, you know, $30 a ticket and gets his beer and popcorn and roots. Now he has not only a rooting interest, he's got a vested interest in improving the quality of the product. Why wouldn't there? The only other person that I wish may have gotten involved if I were a Met fan and bought the team after reading some of the things I read yesterday is Michael Bloomberg. I mean, Cohen's worth $15 billion. Apparently, Michael Bloomberg's value is $55 billion. So the only disappointment for me yesterday as a Met fan was, why the hell didn't Michael Bloomberg buy this team? Why is Steve Cohen buying this team? I need $55 billion to help with this. But of course, they should be optimistic and encouraged. I have no other reason to believe that in 1 to 3 years, this ship does a total about face.
All right, Ravi. I hope the train continues to roll through the postseason for a little bit longer than 4 games.
Amen to that.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast.
Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
After Game 1 of the World Series, Mookie Betts spoke with Kenny Mayne on SportsCenter at night.
Ton of fun. I'm just happy to be here with this group of guys. You know, they've made it so much fun for me and really easy for me. I just kind of sit back and watch them play.
Our baseball historian Carl Ravitch, who probably got this from Tim Kirkchen, tells us that you and Babe Ruth are the only two in the history of World Series play to walk and then steal two bases in the same inning. Did you consider stealing home to get Babe Ruth off you?
No, I didn't. I just needed to get to second so everybody could have some tacos. You know, that's what's important to me.
And then you got to third, and then you came in with what was a consequential run. You ran right on contact. Take us through that play.
I knew I needed to get a decent primary lead, and then secondary lead. I needed to be ready, as soon as the ball hits the bat. And, I've practiced it so many times in spring training throughout the season, just for this one moment, and I was able to execute.
You make it sound kind of boring, but you're one of the most exciting guys playing in the game right now. Do you remember your other World Series home run a couple years back, who you hit it off?
Yeah, it was my only other one, and off Kirsch. We never definitely didn't bring that up, though.
Do you know what kind of pitch it was?
His signature slider. It was actually a good pitch. He just threw it right into the one place I could hit it.
Well, this time you're on his side. It's got to be comfortable when he starts dealing like the way he was for you guys to be out there. Then you get a little lead and the game gets a little more comfortable.
Yeah, when he was rolling like that, we knew all we had to do was score a couple runs and he was going to hold them. And I know they scored a couple runs late, but, you know, we were able to hold them off and, win game one.
Where do you feel you stand in all-time Mookies right now? There's Mookie Blaylock. There's you, Mookie from Do the Right Thing. Like, do you feel you're up at the top at this point?
I feel like we're close. I was named after Mookie Blaylock, so he's got to be ahead of me. Mookie Do the Right Thing. I don't know what his last name is. I just know it's Mookie. He was known before me. So I guess I'm third since I'm the third one, but... I'm just happy to be a part of some great Mookies.
And Mookie Blaylock, the former name of the band Pearl Jam, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You guys had to struggle so much to come back in your last series to get there. Did you guys have a kind of a different comfort level? Like, hey, we're happy to be here. Let's just go have fun and play relaxed.
Yeah, it was, like you said, a struggle to get here. A lot of emotions, it took a lot out of us, getting through that last series. And, we're here now, just enjoy it and see what happens.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and producer for MLB.com. We rely on her for numbers all over the place. Sarah, but I got to start today with a confession for you. Okay. The other day I told you that in writing this article that you helped me with about the greatest World Series performers ever, that I had Madison Bumgarner one. I got cold feet. And before I filed it, I changed the ranking and I didn't have Bumgarner one. I just looked at it again and again and again. And I thought, how do I pick against Mr. October, Reggie Jackson, who has just crazy numbers? So I apologize for that because I know you were excited on your mom's behalf that I picked Bumgarner.
I was very excited about that. And my mother was very excited about that. She texted me about that. But it's okay. I mean, I do think that, we get a lot of recency bias, and I was worried when I sent you some lists and had Bumgarner up there that maybe I was being too recently biased with that. And because I saw that happen and a lot of these other performances I didn't actually see happen, but they're, I don't know, 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, these are all outstanding performances to do all of these things in the World Series. So
yeah.
I don't mind. We'll see what my mom says.
Reggie Jackson, my goodness, when you go back and look what he did,
yeah.
I mean, and the funny thing is he missed the whole 72 World Series because of an injury. And we finally got a chance to play in a World Series in 73. Your Mets, he beat up on him in game 6 and 7. And then in the 77 World Series, he just destroyed the Dodgers. I know that because he made me cry as a little kid.
Oh,
all right.
No.
Let's play the numbers game.
Number 3.
Number 3 is 50%. So that was Clayton Kershaw's whiff rate last night in his start, which was the highest in any game of his career where he threw at least 25 pitches. And I really think this is worth noting because Clayton Kershaw is so good. And I know the postseason and I know all of that, but Clayton Kershaw has had so many outstanding starts in his entire career. And that 50% was a higher whiff rate than he'd had in any start of his career, including the regular season, including the playoffs, including everything else. It was the highest by a starter in a World Series game, as far back as we have pitch tracking, and one of just five postseason starts where a pitcher had at least 25 swings against him and had at least a 50% whiff rate in it, along with ones by Tim Lincecum, Corey Kluber, Blake Snell, and Walker Buehler in the postseason in that span.
Number two.
Number two is three. So Cody Bellinger has homered in back-to-back games. He homered in NLCS Game 7, then he homered again last night. Only one player in Dodgers history has homered in more than two straight games in the postseason. It was Bill Madlock in three straight in the 1985 NLCS. And the amazing thing with the Dodgers is I think I've brought this note up in some form or another, like four times already this postseason, because they've had a bunch of guys go, you know, hit a home run in back-to-back games, but nobody else in Dodgers history has homered in three straight postseason games. But maybe Bellinger will do it tonight.
Number one.
Number one is two. So Mookie Betts had the two stolen bases last night. We know he was the second player in MLB history with two stolen bases and a walk in the same inning, with the other being Babe Ruth. The last player with multiple stolen bases in consecutive postseason games, regardless of how many innings they took or anything else, was Ricky Henderson in 1999 in two straight NLDS games for the Mets. And five players have had multiple stolen bases in back-to-back World Series games. Omar Vizquel in 1997, Kenny Lofton in 95, Bobby Tolan in 1972, Lou Brock in 1968, and Jimmy Slagle in 1907. But this is the one where I was like staring at this of how has this not happened before? Only one player in postseason history has had at least one home run, which Mookie Betts had last night, and at least one stolen base in back-to-back postseason games. Jose Canseco in two straight in 1988. That's wow. Just back-to-back postseason games, not even just World Series. That was actually ALCS Game 4 for him. And then World Series Game 1, 1988, against the Dodgers.
So you and I have friends who are fans of various teams. On a scale of 1 to 10, what's the bitterness scale among the Red Sox fans that you speak with watching Mookie Betts play this way?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, just look at Twitter last night. I mean, it's incredible. Mookie had this amazing game, and yet the Red Sox were, I think, trending on Twitter. It's definitely a conversation topic. But you know what's so great about Mookie Betts is that the sense I get from people who I know who are Red Sox fans and from people who I see talking is like, Mookie Betts is just so lovable. You have so much respect for everything he does that it's hard to be too angry. I know there's anger towards the Red Sox, maybe towards the way the team is run itself, but you can't not smile watching Mookie Betts do all of this.
No, the reporters who cover the Red Sox are tweeting out a lot with sarcasm about "quote unquote" payroll flexibility. A lot of that, believe me, is going to become a running theme as we go into 2021 in Boston for sure. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Apologize to your mom for me.
I will.
Bleacher tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher tweets for Wednesday. First up, we got Debbie Gammons Brown. She writes in, "We know you root for good stories, not teams. So what stories are you rooting for in this World Series, Buster?"
Yeah, and Taylor, I don't know if you saw, but Debbie sent out a tweet the other day saying that she loved the story about Tim Kirkchen jogging around the parking lot to the tune of Rocky, put out by our producer, Justin Ware. You know, that's a pretty cool tweet.
I'm rooting for more of that, more stories like that. Maybe Tim will have something good when he returns to the pod on Monday, but I'm guessing not. That seemed like he was a little, "I wish no one had seen me do that."
I know, exactly. So the stories I'm rooting for in this one, you know, I'm rooting for Clayton Kershaw. He's a really good person. You know, it'd be nice to check his box. I'd hate the idea of a Hall of Fame player, you know, first ballot unanimous selection like him going through his career and just having that hangover. I find it to be a little bit tired. And so I kind of want that over with. You know, I root for individual players in the team for different reasons. You know, Blake Treinen, great guy. You know, Dave Roberts, George Lombard, different people in the organization you're really happy for. And it's interesting on the Dodgers side. One of the people in the front office is Galen Carr, who I went to the same high school as he did, and I've gotten to know him through the years. And on the other side, if the Rays won the World Series, and Oliver Drake, who went to the same high school that Galen and I did, he would get a World Series ring. So somebody from my high school is getting a World Series ring by the time this is over. And the Rays are terrific people. You know, Kevin Cash, would be fun to see him rewarded. Kevin Kiermaier, who just loves baseball, I'd be happy if he won. So those are kind of the stories I'm rooting for.
Next up, we got P.K. Steinberg. He writes in, I'm getting a sense that for however good the Rays pitching is, and normally good pitching wins World Series, the Dodgers hitters are just much better. What do you think?
Yeah, P.K., I agree with you. It's why I picked the Dodgers to win the series. I felt like their experience would manifest, but after watching that last night and knowing that Blake Snell is starting tonight, I should have been more aggressive than picking the Dodgers in six. Sorry about that, Taylor.
It's all good. Next, we got Kayaking Smith. He writes in, he's basically saying he thinks the Braves would have won a best of five series against the Dodgers and wants to know if you think the LDS should be best of seven.
No, I don't think so. I think the playoffs are long enough. In fact, this year, you know, with 16 teams, I think they're a little bit longer than what you normally have. And after all, this year is an aberration. I like the division series being best of five.
And finally, Scotty Barnes at Scotty O. Barnes writes in, what odds do you give for Major League Baseball to start with the same schedule, East versus East, West versus West, et cetera, in the 2021 season?
Yeah, Scotty, your question is based on the question, essentially, whether or not we're going to be back in the same situation with the coronavirus. And I loved what Hal Steinbrenner said last week in an interview on the Michael Kay Show when he was asked about fans in the stands and, you know, how different are things going to be? And he said, I have no idea. And neither do you. None of us have any idea until I think, you know, there's some kind of a vaccine and people are comfortable going to a ballpark and massing. I just, liability is reduced for these teams with fans showing up in the ballpark. I think we're going to be right back in the same situation. So fingers crossed that they find a vaccine and they can distribute that on a, you know, wide basis, because until then, I think we're going to have a lot of lockdown. What do you think, Taylor?
I'm kind of with you, man. I think we're going to be in the same boat. And people sleep on the distribution of the vaccine. Keep an eye on that, everyone.
Yes.
We'll talk about the vaccine, but it's very hard. There's 300 plus million people in our country. Think about how long it's going to take for everyone to get one. So something to think about, unfortunately. All right, that's it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And just one quick thing. I got a tweet yesterday, you know, waiting for the podcast. I know my schedule is annoying and it takes me a little bit longer than I'd like to get it out. But if you subscribe to the podcast, basically the second I press publish, it's going to be in your feed. So that is a major key if you have not figured that out already.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Carl, to Sarah, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.